Hi everyone, it's Friday. Let's sum up what we had this week. One of the busiest weeks so far. As you recall, it started with a motion in Parliament, a motion that was actually meant only to exert more pressure on Israel. It didn't really matter much, not for the hostages, not for Israel, not for Palestinians.
That's the voice of Israel's ambassador to Canada, Ido Moed. He was recording a short video for his embassy's social media accounts. He's wearing an orange necktie in honor of the Bibas children, who have red hair, a yellow plastic band on his wrist, and on his dress shirt, he wears a yellow ribbon pin for bringing them home. It's his daily effort to remind everyone he meets the hostages have now spent over 170 days in captivity in Gaza. The symbols are just some of the souvenirs Moed picked up in Israel earlier this month when he made a lightning trip back. It was his first one since October 7th, but it wasn't a vacation. He was accompanying Canada's Foreign Minister, Melanie Joly, and Canada's Minister of Mental Health and Addiction, Yara Sachs, on their diplomatic tour through Israel, which we've reported about. Although Moed didn't go with them into Ramallah when they visited Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority. Moed says Canada's pivot on selling arms to Israel and on other issues like UNRWA funding sends the wrong message at the wrong time. And he says Israel's now considering its options, whether to retaliate and stop selling Canada any Israeli arms and military technology.
It is worrying. We follow that with concern because the only change between this motion being raised or not is the October 7th massacre perpetrated by Hamas. That's the only reason that this motion is out there. And so it's a reward for Hamas.
I'm Ellen Besner, and this is what Jewish Canada sounds like for Tuesday, March the 26th, 2024. Welcome to the CJN Daily, a podcast of the Canadian Jewish News, sponsored by Metropia. The whole issue of Canada stopping to approve more export permits for weapons or parts bound for Israel has been very confusing. Unlike the Americans, Canada doesn't sell or donate weapons directly to Israel. Canada issues permits to private companies who make them. According to reports, Canadian companies make and sell Israeli military equipment such as rifles, carbines and ammunition, and vehicles, telecommunications gear, decontamination equipment, protective gear, and simulators. Last year, it was worth $28 million for Canada, but that's not a lot, considering that Israel sells Canada four times that amount, worth about $130 million. But Ottawa has paused approving export permits for the lethal weapons since the Israel-Gaza war started after October 7th, and on January 8th, Canada paused all non-lethal equipment sales permits because it has to abide by international treaties that Canadian weapons won't be used to carry out human rights abuses. The Canadian government's new policy comes as the United Kingdom is now also considering pausing arms export permits to Israel, especially if the IDF goes ahead and invades Rafah. So how did Canada's decision play back in Jerusalem, where Israel's foreign minister Israel Katz said the move undermines Israel's right to self-defense against terrorists and says history will judge Canada's current action harshly? Israel's ambassador to Canada, Ido Moed, joins me from Ottawa.
Thank you for having me.
Would have hoped that this would have been all over the last time we spoke to you, but it's 5.5, 6 months later.
Yep.
And here we are. I like to start off because your Twitter feed posts every day pictures of the day that it's still 106, 107, 108 days. I was wondering what that means to you, because I haven't seen it on other embassy social media. So I wondered if this is a thing that's your thing.
That's my thing. Just like this tie, I want to remember every day in the morning and in the evening and during the day that there are 134 hostages being held there. This orange color is for the kids, the Bibas kids. And it's our story. This is our lives. This is what is happening in Israel. And this is our, each and every one of us, story. We have to remember. And our memory is what has kept our people, our Jewish people, what it is. So remembering today, every day, that these that our family is still held captive in Gaza, that we are fighting for their lives, that we are there to retrieve them, and that we have to stay together. All of that in a nutshell, has I'm very much into symbolism. So I, for me, for my person, I need that, and I need to share that with others to remember that this is the longest day of terror, that this day has been lasting for a very long time. I encountered recently a calendar, but actually on every day it's the 7th of October. Saw that in Israel, and it is. So that's a date we'll never forget. It's also Simchat Torah. So the Simcha of the Torah will change forever. Although it's a very significant holiday for the Jewish people, it will also have another meaning. And this is a source of resilience for us, a source of strength. So
and you do this yourself? You pick the images, you decide which?
Yeah, absolutely. So sometimes it's these were the latest ones were pictures that I took in Israel from the hostages square in Tel Aviv or the airport. And sometimes it's just a computer generated picture. I'm very much into technology, so ChatGPT or other, you know, other applications that to find a way to symbolize what we feel, what we have to think about when we're thinking about the hostages.
Let me go back to what you just said. You talked about symbolism is important. The Canadian government had a motion in the House of Commons on Monday night, and there were some symbols of keffiyehs and watermelon pins shown in the House of Commons. When you watched this, what went through your mind?
So the keffiyeh, in whatever shape or form, very mistakenly in my mind, has become a sort of a symbol of resistance against Israel. It's a symbol of not recognizing Israel's right to exist. And so when so many people wear that, I wonder, do they really know that what this keffiyeh represents? Keffiyeh is worn in Saudi Arabia, in Jordan, in Egypt, in many countries that maintain peace with Israel. But it's not worn as a symbol of resistance against Israel. It's just a cultural thing that people use. It's a head covering that men use. And it stays as that. There is red, there is black, there is white, there are all kinds of colors. And all of a sudden here, people try to look for symbols that symbolize something that doesn't really exist. I mean, what is a watermelon? It has three colors. And the Palestinian flag, but also the Sudanese flag and the Jordanian flag or the Kuwaiti flag has these four colors. So what is really the point here? What is somebody trying to use it for? What is actually the message? I don't get it. The only thing that I would read into it is that somebody does not respect Israel's right to exist, no matter what they say, because the symbol that they carry actually says something that contradicts most probably the verbal message.
How did you explain the optics, again with symbolism, to your foreign affairs department when you had these pictures coming out of the House of Commons?
So I think they will share my same sense as most Israelis would, that keffiyehs have nothing to do with the national aspirations of the Palestinians. They have something to do with the fact that they don't respect Israel's right to exist. And I think that this is wrong. And I think that people need to know that if they want to express solidarity with the Palestinian people, they should find other ways to do that.
So when Israel Katz tweeted that what happened in the House of Commons on Monday with the motion would hurt Israel's defense, and that it was a bad look for Canada, it would be destabilizing for the region. What is your opinion about what Canada did on Monday in the House of Commons?
Look, it's a non-binding motion. I think that I said exactly what I thought about it. It's basically rewarding terrorism that is instigated by Hamas, by all kinds of political pressure against Israel. It pays a lip service to the hostages and to Hamas violence. Because if one wants to end the situation, there are only two things that need to happen, and it will cease immediately. And one is the immediate release of the hostages, and the other one is that Hamas put down the weapons. Both of these issues, and only these issues, will make the difference. And so if one wants to stop what is going on in the Gaza Strip, that's the only solution. There is no other way but calling for the renewal of funding of UNRWA or any kind of other or pressure, political pressure on Israel will not make a difference. As you know, UNRWA is linked with Hamas. It's been infiltrated by Hamas. It's queued by Hamas. And since UNRWA has monopolized the assistance to the Gaza Strip, and it's working according to the priority of Hamas, one can understand that aid doesn't really get to those people who are really in need, but those people who Hamas would prefer them to have it, and most of it are Hamas terrorists and their families. So there is something completely skewed there. And again, this is an anti-Israel motion, and in that sense, we said it very clearly. It doesn't really resolve anything, doesn't change anything on the ground. It's just what is being said here in Parliament. And I think that they also applaud this kind of motion.
You did say, though, that the part of the motion, which was that the Canadian government will pause its military technology, lethal, non-lethal arms sales to Israel, would weaken our possibility to defend ourselves against terrorism of Hamas. Can you specifically tell us how exactly that would happen? How would it weaken?
Yes, well, I wouldn't like to go too much into details, but just to say that, you know, the extent of arms sales between Canada and Israel is not that much. It's not that big. And so we'll continue to be able to defend ourselves. But I think that what is the position here, the political statement, and the fact that other countries look at Canada and at Canada's position is something that has to do with sort of a broader political aspect and not specifically the technical military capability of Israel to defend itself. It's a wrong message at the wrong time.
There were statements in the press. I'm going to read it. Much of the gear Canada exports to Israel, I don't know if this is true or not, so I want you to say yes or no, is modified in Israel, shipped back for use by the Canadian forces, or shipped onward to Canada's military allies abroad. Is that true?
So I'm aware of those reports, but I wouldn't like to confirm or to refer to them any further.
Is Israel going to retaliate then in terms of military relationship? Because I know Colonel Nahmani, when he was a defense attaché, told us they send about $133 million to Canada from Israel in military hardware and things like that. Is there going to be a retaliation because of this?
We are weighing our options.
What does that mean?
That we'll need to determine very quickly how we respond, and we are weighing the options. And when we decide, we'll also inform. We will make sure that those who need to understand what the response is, they will get to know it.
Were you called in by the foreign ministry or anything after this motion to explain?
No.
Nothing. So you weren't summoned. Okay. Now, you mentioned before we started taping, you went on the mission with Melanie Joly and Yara Sachs to Israel. I'm not sure many people are aware of that. How did that come about?
No, that's protocol. Usually when foreign minister travels to a country, the ambassador to that country will accompany the Minister of Foreign Affairs throughout the visit.
Did you go to Ramallah with them?
No. Ramallah is out of our jurisdiction, as you know.
You saw the photos, I'm sure, that are very controversial.
Yes, I did. Absolutely. Yep.
How did that photo strike you when you saw it? What went through your mind?
Looks like a very friendly picture.
What does Israel say about the fact that Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister, has not gone to Israel? What is the reason that they've told you he's not going?
No, nobody said he's not going. I know it's been contemplated and there's no decision made, but we are ready to receive him at any time.
Ambassador, the U.S. just announced that it will stop paying UNRWA until 2025. What do you think about Canada moving out of sync with our American allies?
We think it's wrong. We think that UNRWA needs to be, at the very least, reformed. We think that much pressure needs to be exerted on UNRWA immediately, because the aid is not getting to those people who are in need. Distributing aid from the air, from the sea, will not get to those who are not able to scramble and get the aid from the street. And these people need to be assisted. They are the weakest one in society. And so there needs to be an alternative to UNRWA. There needs to be an alternative to airdrops and so on. We are doing on our end as much as we can to facilitate the flow of much more aid into Gaza Strip. We know the situation is dire. We know that much more needs to go in. We do our utmost. But I think at the same time, as we are working for alleviating the horrific conditions that people are living under in Gaza, I think that the international community's responsibility is to find ways to go around the monopoly of UNRWA and to deliver aid directly to those in need. And that is what we keep saying. And we also say that to the Canadian government. And it is still possible, even if it's financing UNRWA at the time, it is at this time, it is necessary, not only possible, but it is necessary to find alternatives to UNRWA's flawed organization.
There have been a lot of talk in the press about UNRWA in terms of what you and the Israeli government showed the Canadian officials about whether it was the 12 alleged employees who perpetrated part of the October 7th. Is that, can you clear up for us the confusion about what Canada was told by you and what Canada is being told by the UN?
I know that the UN delegations visited Israel, and we shared with them the intelligence information that we shared also with others. I know that that happened after Canada decided to renew its funding. But the intelligence that we share is very specific. I cannot go into detail because it's intelligence, but I can only say that it was very specific and detailed so that informed decision could be taken. The Canadian
Every
announcement
Friday.
was made on I think on Friday, the 8th of March, somewhere in the afternoon. And we shared the intelligence with Canada before that.
Okay, that's helpful, very helpful. When you have optics like this, with Canada, with the motion, and then UNRWA, and then the military ban, some people say, is Canada still friends with Israel? Does Israel feel that Canada is still a friend? I've heard you say yes, but how does this change the friendship or strain it, if at all?
Friends are able to talk about everything all the time. And this is what we have. We have the channels and we have the capacity to deal with different perceptions of the situation on the ground. But there are some issues sometimes that are, when it comes to our defense, that are more sensitive in our eyes. And so in that, and therefore the reaction of Foreign Minister Katz referred to that and mentioned that he, after he met with Minister Joly, this decision was made. And I think that, you know, having that conversation take place prior to this decision makes us realize that something in the message was not received the way we thought it would be received. And therefore, hence that reaction.
You said earlier before we started taping that you were in Israel, and it was quite eye-opening because diplomacy over here is a whole different thing than physically being there. I'd love to hear some of your impressions of what you saw and what you did when you were with the Canadian delegation back in Israel.
I'll tell you in a nutshell two things that I saw. One is the blow, the trauma. We're in the trauma. Israel is traumatized. Everybody in Israel, Jews and non-Jews, are traumatized by the extent of this attack, by the vicious nature of it, the fact that it was indiscriminate, that it was perpetrated against Jews and non-Jews, against any community, just destroying everything that has to do with Israel. And that's devastating for so many people, Bedouins, Druze, Arab Muslims, Christians, foreigners, and Jews, all alike are traumatized by this. On the other hand, I see also this resilience, this strength, this immense capability to rise above a lot of differences. And you'll see everywhere, Biyachad Nenatzeach, we'll win together. And this is exactly the spirit that we need and that we always have had in the Jewish people to overcome such horrendous times. So we have that resilience, and although we're traumatized, we'll come out of this stronger and we'll do it together. And I'm sure that Israel will look different after this, for better and worse, but it will look different because we have learned to appreciate many things that we took for granted in the past. We learned that we need to address the issue of security in a much more complicated, nuanced way than we thought we could. And we'll have to think about our joint future together as a nation. And we will. The connection between Israel and the diaspora is extremely strong. It's stronger now than ever. Around the world, the rise of anti-Semitism has also been, people in Israel understand that, and they are very concerned about that. We see it also here in Canada. We see the concern that Jewish communities have about their own security. And at the same time, we also see that they feel stronger and closer to the communities in Israel. And that is a source that for us is where we actually take our motivation to continue to work together to improve our lives, but also to make sure that as a nation, the Jewish people will thrive. Am Israel Chai, what can I say?
Nicely said. And that's what Jewish Canada sounds like for this episode of the CJN Daily, sponsored by Metropia, Integrity, Community, Quality, and Customer Care. If you want to follow Ambassador Mered's daily artistic posts about the hostages, which are some of his own photos and quite a lot of ChatGPT, we put the link to his account in our show notes, where you might also see his orange necktie. And we've also posted the full written summary of this conversation for those of you who prefer to read the interview in print. Thanks for listening to the CJN Daily. We're back on Thursday.